Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we are fresh off of an entertaining All-Star weekend. I was in the building in the area, so Steve and I talk about some of the sights and sounds, what we enjoyed about the weekend, and then we recap all of the events and the All-Star game in general. Then we talk a little bit about the second half of the season. What are some of the storylines that we are interested in? May not be the biggest overall, but what intrigues us? And then we close with Unrivaled. The 1-on-1 tournament is over with. Chelsea Gray has added to the trophy case when we talk about some of our favorite matchups, some of the physicality that we saw in this 1-on-1 matchup, and we preview the Unrivaled doubleheader happening on Tuesday night. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy birthday. How the heck are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. I'm 39, and my knees hurt, but I feel good.
Okay, well, aside from the bees, glad you're feeling good. I do appreciate you, big dog, first and foremost as a person, but for what you mean to the pod as well. You are the star of this thing. Excited to keep doing this with you. This for 5 years now as we're rolling through it, having fun. So just want to say I appreciate you. Send your birthday wishes to Steve. Quick disclaimers before we get into All-Star thoughts, because we are coming off of All-Star weekend. One, barring any big news or anything shifting, we are going to the mailbag for the Friday episode of the pod. So if you have NBA questions, WNBA questions, Unrivaled questions, music, movies, we want to broaden the thing out a little bit more. If you have any questions for us, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Also, Steve and I are going to be live again in the NBA app on League Pass for a strategy stream. It is looking like it is going to be Spurs Suns at 8:30 Eastern. If not, it would be Sixers Hawks at 7 Eastern. We will be posting out more information in the lead up to Thursday, so just stay tuned with our socials on that front. But if you want to watch a game with us, we're breaking things down live. We will be live on Thursday night. So, Steve, we are fresh off of what I thought was a good All-Star weekend out in Los Angeles. We were both out there for Sports Business Classroom, had a great time there. And then that flowed into the weekend of all of the festivities. So before going event by event, because I'm sure you have thoughts and I know I have thoughts on everything that transpired, how did you absorb the weekend? What would you grade the weekend?
Oh, I give it an A. I mean, for me, I think All-Star Weekend represents, or it should represent, a celebration of the season, a celebration of the game of basketball. I know for some people it's very easy target to be like, ooh, this is smelly, it's not as good as it used to be, da 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 da. I think that kind of discredits what it is. And so for me, and maybe this could just be my personal bias, I always have nostalgia with All-Star Weekend, just because, you know, my dad was involved with it for so many years, and so it just brings a lot of memories up. But I think it's a good time for everyone to come together and kind of just enjoy some extra basketball. And I think the weekend delivered in that sense. When you look at Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, when you combine it all together, it was compact, it was tight. I think a lot of good things took place, and I think it's okay to celebrate it. I don't necessarily think you have to go in and think it's negative. I think if you get to a place where you're always trying to fix things, you're always trying to change things, what are you enjoying? Which part are you in, like, which part is making sense to you? And you get to a point where criticism is fair. You know, I never want to be the person to say you shouldn't enjoy this because of that, because basketball is subjective and I don't want to be an opinion changer. But at the same time, if it's always the same tone and everyone's running the same play, who are we celebrating? You know, if you're a kid watching this and you want to go see other people that enjoyed it and you're just getting a bunch of noise that says, oh, hey, this sucks, that's not great. That's not awesome. And so, you know, everyone talks about nostalgia. Nostalgia, you have to create memories, right? Like, so I'm 39, right? I lived through the wheel on the slam dunk contest. I've lived through some bad three-point contests. Like, not everything's been amazing All-Star Weekend-wise. I mean, they've had two-ball shooting stars, different type of events. But you have to kind of have an appreciation for what it is, because you're either going to chase this thing away and then ask for it to come back because of nostalgia, or your nostalgia is going to be that, hey, this thing sucked. And I don't want anyone to really feel that. So I enjoyed it. You know, seeing Brent Berry in the Clippers jacket he wore in the slam dunk contest, chef's kiss. I was totally pleased. Rising Star was very fun. We got to enjoy that together. Like, I think there's room to just kind of lower the temperature and take it for what it is. I think that's important to do. So for me, All-Star Weekend was great. The new All-Star Game format was great. I enjoyed it. I hope more people enjoyed it, and I hope they had the freedom to express that they enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. I think that is very well put, and I think it's a fair perspective to have. And I think it is important in general to find that balance. Because as you mentioned, as you say, All-Star Weekend was perfect, you enjoyed it. I'm sure you're not arguing that it was perfect. There are things that could have been better that would have made it more enjoyable for you. But you still have kind of that grounding level of, here's the good in this. Now that I've acknowledged the good in this and can see why this happened, how it happened, et cetera, now let's talk about maybe minor tweaks to make it better the next time. But you want to have that general appreciation mixed in. I love that point from you. I think for me, like, I probably go more B, B plus than A, but like, I did enjoy myself. And I know part of that is, like, this isn't my first All-Star Weekend, but this is the first All-Star Weekend on the NBA side that I've been to in a couple of years now. And so, like, I was, on a very basic level, just happy to be back in the environment. And so that was cool. Like, getting to soak in the action live, getting to see some of my media pals, you know, that enhanced my weekend, things like that. So I was just generally in a better mood, as you alluded to. Like, we got to watch Rising Stars together. Like, I talking about Yannick Cohen Niederhauser with you in person, it's a different experience than, you know, hopping and, you know, playback or Discord or whatever the case may be. So, like, that was fun for me. I think there is naturally going to be a lot of noise about, like, what some of the crowds were. We're talking Friday, maybe early part of Saturday. And I think it's easy to kind of, like, see those screenshots or those videos feed into, see, this weekend is bad, yada, yada, yada. Into that, I'm just like, hey, we should probably consider what some of the logistics were, how early some of this was, like, the ease or lack thereof of, like, getting to some of these places when you're talking about, like, LA/Inglewood traffic. And you're talking about the time change with all the stuff happening on West Coast time. So, like, yeah, it probably is going to be difficult to drive in rush hour traffic to get to the Rising Stars competition at 6 local time, when a lot of people are getting off of work at 4 or 5 o'clock. And so, like, that might be part of why the crowd looked like this when it first started, and it looked like this by the time we got to the end of the competition. So, like, those things, where I'm just like, hey, let's just add some context to some of these things. Go ahead.
I was stunned by that. I didn't know that those, like, I was in the building for Rising Stars. And so I never once thought to be like, well, there's not a lot of people in here. It just felt like a late arriving crowd. And honestly, the crowd that was in there at the start was very loud for Yannick Cohen Niederhauser. And so they were very into it, and the building started to fill in as time progressed, because there's traffic, you know what I mean? There's things that happen. And I will say, those LED lights, you cannot see human beings when they are flashing. I'm not joking. This is not cope. You literally cannot see people when those things are going. They were bright. They gave me a headache, low-key, but I powered through it. We're good to go. I understand discourse. I understand people enjoy discourse. I understand the need for discourse. Some things don't need to have discourse. All-Star Weekend's always kind of been an event for certain types to a degree. I'm not saying it should be that way or it has to be that way, but it's always kind of been that way as long as I've been alive. So I'm not surprised if some people just don't go, or they don't make it at a certain time, or they show up late. Like, I don't think it's an indictment, in my opinion. It's been a corporate event my whole life. So, I mean, what are we doing? Taking screenshots and be like, look, see, no one cares. Like, I don't know if that's the truth. And then also, like, we can't do this thing where we want to change things and then complain about the change, right? So everyone was like, hey, I don't want this to dominate my night. So they moved it earlier. Like, yeah, the Olympics also helped, but they moved it earlier in the day. And so, hey, why is it so early? Because you kind of wanted it that way. I remember you said that last year. You didn't want it to dominate your night, so it's in the middle of your day, so that way, you know, you can enjoy it and then do something else. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the anger there. Like, I thought it being a little bit earlier was nice. I know it's a shift for some people who didn't know it was earlier, but hey, yeah, get your 3-point contest in, get it in, and then off to the races. You're good to go. Here's the All-Star Game. It's not super late at night. It's right in the middle of the day. You can enjoy it and then do something else. I thought that was good. To just have a little bit of a mix up to where yes, this is a highlighted event, but you don't have to wait and put all of this, your whole Saturday or Sunday, into this particular event. It's on. Mm-hmm. Turn it on. Have some fun. Go enjoy your night. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's where some of, if not flat out criticism, it's more so like, okay, let's talk this through. Like, I think it, at the very least, it should have been well known that things were going to be earlier this year. If by no other reason than, as you mentioned, like, we have the Olympic stuff and the games in LA. So, like, naturally, you're talking about the time differences up there. And so, like, I think the logic behind having things happen earlier, particularly on Saturday and Sunday, let's get this middle of the day, enjoy it as your launching pad to the rest of the night, especially Saturday was Valentine's Day. So, like, if you want your hoops fixed and then go out to dinner, whatever the case may be, you can do that. And so, like, it's a nice blend. I think the concern that I saw, at least on my feed, very anecdotal, was more so like, hey, I didn't, it's less do I agree or disagree with the logic. It was more, I didn't know this was going to be the shift. And so, and more specific to that, I want to ask you about Saturday, as they went from, you know, they started with the 3-point contest versus it would have been shooting stars or the skills competition first, then the 3-point contest, then the dunk contest. Did you mind them having the 3-point contest first?
No, I thought it was smart, especially if you, you know, because I watched it on TV. And so you're leading from Olympic coverage to, hey, we're doing NBA All-Star Saturday night. The 3-point contest is about to happen. You should watch this. So you're basically sandwiching the events. You know what I mean? You're taking the 3-point mm-hmm. contest, which for some people is the main event, and you're saying, hey, this is about to be on right now. So we're grabbing you with this first. We're going to get you into the vortex, and then we're going to do shooting stars, and then we're going to do the dunk contest. You can't lead with the dunk contest because you don't know how it's going to land or end. And you can't lead. Yeah. You could lead with shooting stars, but I it doesn't necessarily grab the same as a 3-point contest. So you get people into a 3-point contest, you lead in the shooting stars, you end with a dunk contest, and you go about your day. So I thought stacking it that way was fine.
Okay. So yeah, I think that's also fair. Again, that is more so like, hey, I didn't know that the order was swapped, more than, hey, why is this order being swapped? At least from what I saw in terms of some of the conversation around it. Okay. There's your general overview. I think we both overall enjoyed it. Let's get into some of these events, Steve. Let's start with the Rising Stars Challenge. Team Vince ends up winning the whole thing. Game one, Team Melo defeating Team Austin 40-34. Team Vince knocking off Team T-Mac 41-36. And then Team Vince knocking off Team Melo 25-24. VJ Edgecombe was your MVP. Did you have any major takeaways from this one? Any moments that stood out to you among the competition?
I mean, I thought that everyone kind of competed. It was a good, fun format. I think you kind of understood, like, the tournament aspect of it. The target score kind of worked within this format. And I think, you know, Team Melo, it was interesting to see. We kind of had, like, some, hey, are you guys going to shoot a bunch of threes? And then Stephon Castle and Dylan Harper were like, actually, we'll adjust this to some mid-ranges. Like, Stephon Castle was like, you know what? I'm going to try and find a way to get to my mid-range and get it going. And for Team Austin, it was just, it was Niederhauser and it was Jan Hansen, and they were carrying that team for a nice bit. And so that was fun to kind of watch them do that. I enjoyed the competitive spirit, you know, even as much as it felt like, okay, they're not necessarily going a million miles an hour, you can kind of feel they started to get after it as the games went on. So that was fun. I thought VJ Eskom really took control over the two games that Team Vince had. And as far as, like, I'm not only willing to drive, I'm willing to make these plays late. And he kind of stood out in that way. I was Team T-Mac really impressed me until they lost. That sounds crazy to say. But I was really like, okay, I get it. They got Colin Knipple, they got Cam Spence, they got Jalen Tyson, they're going to compete. The two Wizards are going to get after it. And then they ended up winning because they couldn't stop VJ Edgecombe. So, I mean, he kind of just took over in a way that made it really fun. So it was just good to see those guys kind of get out there, set the tone for the weekend to a degree, and let it be known, hey, this is going to be competitive basketball that's going to be played, but also showcase their skills. So I thought most people really did well for themselves on Friday.
I think, quickly before I get into some of my broader views, with the young Wizards in particular, one of the more underrated fun parts for me this weekend, it's like, like Bob Carrington, Keyshawn George, Trey Johnson, like all of them kind of talking about each other in some of these press these press scrums was a very good bit. It's very clear that they have like good relationship with each other and good banter with each other. So like for people that aren't Wizards media, getting to get a light shone into that was a lot of fun. So like post game, Trey Johnson was asked about Bob Carrington. He was like, man, he could have stayed home. This is what he's going to do. We needed buckets. He just wanted to pass the ball. Like, what is this? We needed points, brother. I was like, you know what? I appreciate those kind of things. But, like, to the overarching point, like, seeing who was going to be aggressive versus who was going to try to just fill their role and get it through it was kind of fun to track. Like, VJ Edgecombe, to your point, really took over the drives, the pull-ups. Got after it defensively as well. I think that should be highlighted. And so, naturally, again, named MVP of the event, played incredibly well. Very funny, like Ace Bailey checks in for Team Melo. It's like, you know what? I will us to victory. It's like, okay, well, when you don't have the ball, here's Dylan Harper. Here's Stephon Castle. But if you like mid-range jumpers, this was low-key the event for you. Because it was a lot of high pick and roll. This turns into an ISO. I can get to these short pulls or some of these turnarounds. Like, if this is what you want, this is what you can get. I thought Donovan Clingan gave Team Melo some good minutes in this. I always appreciate the screening from him. But, like, okay, let me sprinkle in these threes as well. Like, it's very much an extension of what the Portland season has been for him, especially as of late. He is playing incredibly well. We'll sprinkle that in. But, like, getting to see some of that was a good time. The Derrick Queen passing popped in this one, particularly in the final. And just, like, you watch Pelican games, you see what his passing ability is and like how quick the processing speed is for him. In a format like this, when the defense isn't 100%, you can even further see like, oh, he's just willing to get this out of his hands. Like there was a pass late. I want to say ball finds him at the top of the key and it's just like a touch pass to a cutter. And I think a foul was drawn off of that. It's like, you're not supposed to see this as quickly and as easily as you do. Like I get the format as the format, but again, another flashbulb moment into like, this is who this guy is. And what he's going to continue to grow into. So, like, that part was fun. To your team, T-Mac point, like, I was expecting the cutting and the inverted screens and some of the ghost stuff, like, to really pop. Like, they just did not shoot as well as I thought they were going to on Friday night, which is peak irony considering the podcast. I was like, hey, man, hey, Con Knipple, I'm excited to see what he's going to do in the three-point contest. Hey, Cam Spencer could have been in the three-point contest. You know, we probably could have had Cam Spencer in instead of Bobby Portis based on what the results were, but that's neither here nor there. We'll get there a little bit later in the pod. But Jalen Tyson gave some good stuff. I enjoyed myself, Steve. Like, I thought all three of the games were competitive, which I think is a positive. Again, we have the target score, so shorter format, but there was always a point in every game where it's like, oh, snap, this is kind of up in the air right now. Like, y'all got to get some stops. And it's fun to see, like, once we get into, we've hit 19 points, 20 points. Okay, what is the plan? A lot of mismatch hunting against Team Melo. Close that one out. So that made me chuckle a little bit live. We'll
leave that there. It was very interesting. Very interesting. I'll say real quick, Vince Carter was very into this entire contest, and salute to Vince. And it was funny because, like, Melo was seated at the end of the bench and T-Mac was seated in the bench and they get up and holler. And Vince was like by the scorer's table standing up. And I'm like, where's Corliss Williamson? What's going on right now? And then Vince was like, hey, they were so kind to let me like call a play. And he was like, hey, I want the big fella in pick and roll. I'm like, hey, Reed Shepard was right there, buddy. Like, you could have done that.
Yeah, Vince wanted this one probably more than any of the players did. And the players certainly wanted it, and especially VJ. And like listening to him after he gets awarded MVP and things, like he was very clear, like, nah, I actually had something to prove here. And so, like, it's always fun when the young guys kind of tap into that. Like, I'm not just here to have a good time. I'm not just here to enjoy the experience. Like, those two things are important. But like, nah, these are my peers. I'm better than y'all. Watch this. Give me the ball. Get out the way. Let me hoop. So I enjoyed the Rising Stars Challenge. It's very funny. We previewed the event. And I feel like we talked pretty highly about everyone except Team Vince. Didn't say anything bad, but it's just like, oh, well, here's our predictions. And Team Vince gets it done. So salute to Vince Carter and the rest of the crew. To the Shooting Stars competition, Steve. I'm going to say the three-point contest. I'm going to go out of order. I first wanted to ask a baseline question. because the format for Shooting Stars this year was a little bit different than what we saw the last time we had it. Did you enjoy the tweaks from this version compared to the last time we saw it in 2015?
I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, depending on how much you like half court shots, I didn't have an issue with it. I did not know the celebrity passer aspect existed until they came out with the teams, and I thought that was very interesting. I thought Team Knicks had an advantage because of their shooting ability, and then they had a double advantage because Rick Brunson was their passer, who actually knows how to pass. And so I think it was, I didn't mind it. I like going in order, hitting every spot. There's a strategy to it. You got to make shots. I think all the tweaks make it interesting because you have to get to different spots and do different things. But like, yeah, you give three shooters to someone who's actually passing the ball in their shooting pocket, it get pretty tricky. And so that's why I was like, I think Team Knicks is eventually going to just rise up. And they did. It's exactly what happened.
Nah, that's a salute to you. You nailed it when we were predicting things on Friday on the Team Knicks front. I'm glad you started with the celebrity passer bit, though. I'm going to answer my own question shortly. Hey, I tweeted this, I wrote about it. I'll say it here. I think I'm cool with Drewski not being a celebrity passer if this comes back next year. I think I'm all right. We either need to do away with the celebrity. They're going to chuck the pass into like row G during the competition. Like that's, these are important. Like, hey man, we trying to establish a rhythm. What you doing? Why are you tossing it like Brucey in the longest yard? We need the pass to hit the shooting pocket so we can get these shots in. But to the actual format itself, like I thought it was interesting for context. When we saw this back in 2015, you have a player kind of designated to a spot. You have to knock this short block jumper down. You have to knock down this elbow, this top of the key jumper, or whatever. You cannot move until the shot goes down, and then it is half court shot time. The timer stops when you knock one down. So it's how quickly can you get through the stations. This year, all three players had to take a shot at a spot before you move. It kind of goes from there. And it's like, okay, I kind of understand extending the timeout for this year's event and having that kind of shift. And ultimately, if it's going to be Shooting Stars, just having more stations to shoot at makes sense. But I was like, huh, this does feel different. Like I was watching it live and it's like, I don't dislike it. But like this certainly doesn't feel like what the contest was. So I like went back and watched some of the older ones. Like, okay, I knew I wasn't tripping. This was a different format. We did have the half court shot and things like that. So I want to get your opinion on that. As far as the competition itself, like, hey, I just have to give the hat tip to you and Team Knicks. Because it was very funny, like watching Team Cameron in both rounds. So I was like, okay, so they're doing the thing. This is neat. They're knocking down jumpers late. This is cool. And then here come the Knicks. And it's like, well, actually, what if we just knock down all of the 4-point shots? It's like, oh, well, to Steve's point, they do just have the shooters. And then we get to the final round. It's like, oh, snap, Team Cameron has stepped this up. This is going to be kind of tough. And then Team Knicks is like, hey, what if we just knock down all of the 4-point shots again? And then another one for good measure? And then another one for good measure? It's like, okay, well, this is fair. And then naturally, we get to the end of that, presenting the awards and stuff. And it is just Kat and Jalen Brunson banter. You look at some of the stuff like in arena for them, like before, after the competition, and they're still chopping it up, and it's just more banter. It's like, yeah, this is the stuff that you get when you have like actual teammates in this. And so I was intrigued. To the 3-point contest, Steve.
Yeah. Shout out to
you. Yeah. there it is. Shout out to you for nailing Damian Lillard winning the contest. And you said it early on in the conversation too. Dame gets it done, as you mentioned, 2 in the Blazers jersey, 2 elsewhere. He's got the championship round. I just want to say, I already made the Bobby Portis joke, so I'm not going to hang there too long. I felt bad for Khan. He like kind of set the tone a little bit early with his 27. I was like, okay, Rook, this is up. You didn't win on Friday, but that's okay. Let's step this up. And then you get to the final round and it's 17. I was like, that is just not going to be enough, young fella, with the two shooters that you were playing with. I am so sorry that this was your experience. And I kind of felt for Devin Booker. Because what do you mean? We get to knock down the final shot of the rack before the final rack. You were heading into the Moneyball rack. Damian Lillard has already set the bar high with 29. You enter the final rack with 23 points. You need 3 to tie, 4 to win. This is your designated rack. Like, I want the money balls here because I feel like I'm going to kill these corner threes. You make the first two. You miss the third. You miss the fourth. You miss the final one. You hold the follow through in like shock and disappointment. And what kills me, because, you know, again, I was in arena to watch it live. I was like, darn, this kind of stinks. So I like watched it back because I didn't get to hear the broadcast. And Reggie Miller, for whatever you want to say about Reggie Miller on call, Reggie Miller was so distraught as Devin Booker finishes that rack and ultimately loses. It immediately took me back to that Heat Bulls game when when Denzel Valentine took that pull up three late in the fourth when the Bulls were trying to mount their comeback. And like as he's setting up for the shot, you can hear both Bulls and that, no, what? Oh no, that is not the shot. Devin Booker misses that last one, and Reggie Miller's like, oh no. I'm just like, brother, I feel you, but please. I felt for Book there, but what a story this was for Dame, though. We have not seen him. He just comes in firing. Like, yeah, I do just kind of do this. Like, I am a vet in the competition. I am one of the best shooters in NBA history. He kept the warm up, at least the warm up pants, kept the warm up pants on, if I remember correctly. He's like, nah, let's just knock this out. Let's just add more hardware to the cabinet. So, salute to Dame there. Do you have any funny moments through this one? Or is this just a salute to Damian Lillard?
Well, it's a salute to Dame for doing that because it was awesome. Mm-hmm. Great comeback, great story. Another 3-point title in his mantle. You wanted to see Cam Spencer over that. Let that not be erased from history. Oh, we're not going to drop that. I think it was a good 3-point contest. One thing, shout out to Reggie Miller and Jamal Crawford, because you could tell when a player lost themselves in the contest or got out of contention, their immediate disappointment. And it's just like, well, I just don't think he found it in this one. Don't think he had it. It's just sad. Reggie Miller was so excited for this contest and the footwork and the shooting and who's using their legs or not. And that was a very fun aspect of it. You know, Jamal Murray, thanks for trying. Bobby Portis, thanks for trying. I felt kind of bad because Norm Powell was like, hey, I have to redeem myself for last year. Oh, no, I'm running out of time. Oh, I did better. We're good. This is fantastic. Donovan Mitchell quietly had a great first round, low-key. It just did not matter.
It just didn't matter.
Didn't matter at all. He didn't even do that bad. It just didn't matter. I thought I got a little concerned in the first round because Devin Booker was right before Dame in the first round. It was like, hey, here's this 30-piece. Good luck qualifying, old man. And I was like, oh, no. Is Dame not going to make it to the finals? So the day makes it to the finals, and then it ends that way where Devin Booker, it's like, it looks like Devin Booker's about to kill dreams, right? The way he came out at the start, it looks like he's going to kill dreams.
Yeah.
He did not because he didn't finish. But like the intent that Dame had, where you could kind of just tell, all right, man, this is, let me get into my rhythm, let me get into my flow, we're good to go. And then once he started to go, he didn't stop. And that was the craziest part. Now, watching at home, I was like, okay, he can't go first in the finals. Khan has to go first. Because, like, he needs to. Dame had to stay warm enough to get through the finals, but also not go back-to-back. And I felt like that was the key. Once I saw Khan going first in the finals, I was like, oh, okay. I think Dame's gonna be fine. I was very concerned that Dame was gonna have to go back to back. And we weren't gonna get that. But shout out to Dame, man. He did what he had to do.
Shout out to Dame indeed. Shout out to a friend of the program, Ty Windish, does a really good job of covering the Milwaukee Bucks in particular. As Devin Booker finishes that final rack and ultimately does not beat Damian Lillard, immediately tweets out, never tell D Book he's two away from a championship. And I was like, darn, that is quite the callback to the 2021 NBA Finals as the Bucks again beat the Phoenix Suns in that series after going up 2-0. I was like, well, dang, that's a that is a bar and a half on that front. But no, salute to Dame. That was a very entertaining end to that one. And then, Steve, that flows into the dunk contest. And I'm kind of annoyed by some of the conversation around the dunk contest, because I thought the competition itself was pretty good. I thought the dunks were good. Like, I am always a stickler for, like, okay, if you missed your first attempt, like, I want to see the score drop, because, like, hey, you do need to knock this down. You should be rewarded for making your first dunk, those kind of things. So, like, I have, like, judging, like, thoughts. But as far as what we saw some good stuff in the contest. Like, I understand people wanting to see bigger names. Like, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. But I feel like in desire of that being the case and that being what the field is made up of, the actual dunks themselves are just kind of being pushed to the side. And I don't really like that. Like, I had a good job. I had a good time. But we saw some good stuff.
Hey, look, man. Shaw Johnson came out dancing. I was like, oh, I know exactly what time this is right now.
The showman we need.
And he never stopped dancing. But him hitting that pose while jumping over E-40 was classic. I think for me, look, you push the names away from the dunk contest. What do you want? That's what y'all did. Y'all did that. There was no incentive to do the dunk contest because you made fun of everyone who was in it. So, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'll sit and watch, though. Giannis is over there watching. I'll sit and watch. That's fine. I think for me, you get a dunk contest where you have clean dunks that are made. I'm not going to complain. Not a lot of misses. What are we mad about? They're giving their best effort. Let's enjoy the show. Mm-hmm. That's always how I felt about it. If we get a clean, tight dunk contest, what are we mad about? And Keshawn Johnson took advantage of the situation, danced, showed up, popped off, got it done. Like, what else do you want? You know, poor Carter Bryant. Looked like Carter Bryant was going to take it at the end, and then he started talking to Vince Carter for 37 seconds. And
that stressed me out so much. honestly, like, there's a timer. There's a clock. What are you doing? I need for you to get this done. And like, he kept, for the closing dunk in that final round, he kept going for this like between the leg toss off glass into something. Like, first attempt, they went like kind of reverse double pump or reverse windmill. I was like, okay, it would have been nice. Like, I'm not gonna say it was a bad dunk or anything, but like, based on what we had seen from Keshawn Johnson at that point, I'm just like, I don't even know if this is gonna be enough for you to win. Because at that point, he went second. So it's just like, oh, you just have to hit this score and you just win the contest. And so, like, for me, it was like, I don't know if this is going to be the winner for you to begin with. But the fact that he tried it like four or five times, I was like, brother, after two, you should probably move to something else. After three, you absolutely should move to something else. After four, you are trolling yourself. I need for you to move on so you actually give yourself a chance to win. Because, like, you are up against the clock in a literal sense. And also, if there are judges that are like, hey, you missed your first attempt or your second attempt, I'm going to dock you a point or two, whatever. You get into attempt four, like, what do you think your max score is going to be at this point? And so the fact that it went to the wire to that degree, I was like, man, I feel for him, because you could just kind of see the stress starting to percolate as this went on. I'm just like, dang, man, that is a golden opportunity that you just blew. And then it took me back to the pregame comments. Well, he was asked, like, hey, have any Spurs teammates said anything to you? And, like, all of the comments that he's got from, like, De'Aaron Fox and, and others, just kind of like, hey, yeah, don't screw up. Like, very, like, deadpan banter. So, for that to be kind of, like, the pregame thing, again, all jokingly, but for that to kind of be the messages that he's getting heading into it, and then for it to end with, I am going to do this dunk no matter what. Vince Carter, what do you think? I have to finish this dunk. Oh, no. I'm running out of time to finish a dunk. Yikes. Yikes. Like, I feel for Carter Bryant. But
well, where did Carter Bryant go to college?
Oh, I see. This is Arizona, nope. Correct?
No pity.
I'm gonna leave that alone. Okay, couple of notes for me to close out the dunk contest. One, shout out to Jace Richardson, who kept trying this. It really wasn't his fault, because it was like tossed off the side of the backboard into like 360 what he's going for, and the tosses were so bad. They were so consistently bad, which to all dunkers, I guess in a literal sense in this case, like your passer is important for these. You need to invest, if this is going to be part of your dunk contest package, you need to invest in a really good and consistent passer if this is what you're going to go for. Because once the clock is live, you're just kind of stuck with whatever happens in that front. But we end up getting this scary fall for Jace Richardson. And I'm just like, I don't know if he's even going to get a dunk off at this point. Because like that just looked and sounded painful. And then he gets up, and with like 16 seconds left, he gets this 360 off. And so naturally, the score isn't the best because of how late the clock it was, missed attempts, whatever. I'm just like, should we just give him more points because he might just be concussed and he just did a 360 anyway? Like, that ain't easy. I was worried about him, and he got the dunk off anyway. So we had that. You already mentioned Keyshawn Johnson dunking over E40. I wish we were in the studio so I could do like, hey, where's my camera? So Dwight Howard, as a cons, I feel like there's a judge every year where I'm just like, hey, what exactly are you cooking with these scores? Whether it is, I am just going to give everybody like a 7 or an 8 comparatively to everyone else, no matter what I'm seeing. It's like, why are you judging like this? Or I am just going to give you a 9 or 10 no matter what you do. And it's like, why are you scoring like this? And it just felt like Dwight was always on the high side. Which again, like, not inherently bad, but compared to everybody else, and in the context of some of the dunks that we saw, I'm just like, Dwight, it feels like you are happier to be here than some of the contestants with this. Like, what fried me was, first round, Jackson Hayes lines up he wanted this to be a free throw line dunk. Not an easy thing to do, of course. It ends up being this tomahawk, like, 2 or 3 feet inside the free throw line. And so, like, clearly did not accomplish his goal. Made the dunk. It was just a basic tomahawk from like 12 feet out. Every other judge is in the low 40s. And here's Dwight Howard with a 47. And I'm just like, brother, no. You saw the dunk. There are plenty of replays. Like, we're in Intuit Dome. So we have just the mega screen above you. Which, just quick salute to Intuit Dome. Insane arena. First time being there over the weekend. It is as advertised. It is incredible. But you had so many opportunities to see, like, what actually happened on this. Like, how do we land with this? That one fried me. That absolutely fried me. No, shout out to the Carter Bryant jumps up until the end. Rashad Johnson was fun. I will say the Jackson Hayes, like, let me toss it and then tap it to myself before going between the legs. Like, I hadn't seen that one before. So, like, that was nice of you. Are of the mind of like, well, the dunk contest is this because all the dunks have been done before type beat. Like, there's an example of, no, you can still do different things or put different spins on things. Last thing for me, I did chuckle. Carter Bryant starts with the Vince Carter S reverse 360. And it's like a 45 or something for him. It's like, man, we have really evolved watching these dunks at this point. When like Vince Carter almost shut the dunk contest down immediately in 2000. When he started with that. And for Carter Bryant to do this, like, yeah, okay, that's a nice dunk. It does kind of signify what the bar is in terms of what's good. But I enjoyed myself nonetheless. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. Steve, let's talk about the All-Star Game. We had a new format this year. We had the 3 teams of 8, or like 8 adjacent, as we had like some teams with more players where they were like ruled out and all that good stuff. Either way, 3 teams of 8. We had the 12-minute sprints in these games that leads into the final. And so just on a general note, Steve, did you like the format? And what did you like about the format?
Love the format. I was a little worried going into Sunday that, okay, will the 12-minute quarters be too much? But I thought the pace went pretty well. There wasn't a ton of fouls. And I thought you got competitive basketball with a mix of all-star behavior. You know, I think having the clock, having the wins mean something. You just got back and forth to a degree that just felt stronger. And I think the biggest thing I'd say is Victor Wembanyama set the tone on the first play of the game. I'm winning the tip. I'm sprinting down the court. I'm going to post you up and I'm going to get a dunk very, very quickly. And so like him like competing hard, but then like him also guarding Anthony Edwards to start that game was very funny. Cause it's like, sure, man, One, I don't like what you did last year. We'll talk about it another day.
Thank you.
Two, you said it is what it is. That's cool. I'm going to dare you to make some shots. And Ant was like, oh, you're just leaving me open? And he activated Ant, which is very funny considering how the whole night went through. But he activated Anthony Edwards to where you started to see, okay, I'm going to take these step back threes, but there's a lot more wiggle in what he was doing as opposed to at the start. Mm-hmm. You saw that progressively kind of build up. But I like the idea of it. You know, 12 minutes, clock. We split this game up into four quarters. You're not obligated to play the whole time. Like, obviously, you know, poor team Stripes ended up playing a whole lot of time. But, yeah. Yeah, let's get after it. Let's get after it for 12 minutes. Eventually, this clock is going to shorten. And, yeah, we can get up and down. We can shoot a bunch of threes. But there's not enough time for one team to make a whole bunch and be down 20. You know, we got to get after it a little bit. You saw some, like, fun sets actually be run. Like, it was just... It was good to see both teams just kind of get after it. And, like, I thought Wimby was just really, really key in setting the tone, especially in that first game.
Yeah, like, watching Wimby, the seals are what got me with Wimby. Anytime he had somebody smaller on him, whether it's, hey, let's go high pick and roll, like in that first game, it's high pick and roll with him and Luka. He's just kind of pushing out of there, slipping. Like, hey, is somebody going to pick me up? If not, I got a free lane to the basket. And if so, oh, you're small. I don't really, oh, that's fine. I'm going to put my hand up here. Somebody toss me the ball. Let's see if you want to send doubles. Like, watching, particularly in that second world game, like, watching how it progressively got to, hey, we probably need to start sending extra help or sending doubles on some of these Wimby touches. Like, that fried me as the night went on. But, like, Wimby was just there. Like, every defensive rebound, like, yeah, I'm going to push after this. Like, even if I don't go fully coast to coast, I am getting this ball up, and I'm going to make you react to something. And so, like, I agree with you. Anthony Edwards certainly agree with you. Like, he noted after that first game, like, hey, man, Wimby set the tone. Like, I can't kind of have to play at a certain level if he's about to be doing all this, to your point about activating Ant. And, buddy, he had himself a night for All-Star festivities. But I appreciated that portion. Ant ends up bringing it. Well, Kay Cunningham really brought it as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, let's stick with that first Team World game, right? Because you... Nikias Duncan went from, boy, I sure hope they compete, to why are they not doing good with defensive rotations? And that made me raise an eyebrow, because what did you expect from a group of guys that really haven't played together? You thought they're going to just nail defensive rotations? Like, they're just out there. You know what I mean? But I thought it was not only Wimby setting the tone, not only that first game going to overtime, Wimby crashing out over a missed weak side rotation was probably exactly why we were there, because he was at the level. I did my job. Cat, hey, buddy, why did you went too low as the top man? You didn't have to do all that. Mm-hmm. And Wimby's like, hey, why are you down here? And tried to close out himself. And Scottie Barnes makes a shot, unaware that he won the game. And it's like, okay, we're here. This is what it's all about. This is competitive basketball. Now, at that point, I didn't tweet it out, but I was thinking, okay, Wimby is definitely circling every game he has against every Team World member for the rest of the season.
Yes. And I'm glad you brought this play, because, like, we were joking before the recording. I was like, hey, yeah, we're going to end up breaking this down. Like, I was like, actually, as we talk about this more, I kind of want to talk about this possession at this point. Because you get two on the ball in pick and roll. And so you have Anthony Edwards in the left corner being defended by Denny Avdija. And you have Scottie Barnes on the left wing being defended by Karl-Anthony Towns. And so for me, I'm thinking traditionally, okay, well, Denny's the low man in this case. So, like, technically, he should be taking this Jalen Duren role if you're going to take it. Or whatever, and then Cat's just gonna have to kind of split there. Or if you were going more game plan specific, if they were like an actual team, whatever, they got to practice together.
No,
I could understand. Oh, well, not the immediate. No,
no, you can't. The top, if there are two people on the weak side, the top person can only go so far. They will never be able to recover. Does not matter how bad of a shooter that is. You cannot sink that far down, because if you are next to the low man, what are you going to do on any pass out? Mm. You're both in the same spot. You cannot sink that far. Your tag has to be early if you're Cat. And so he sinks into the paint and holds for entirely too long. And I know it's Scotty Barnes, non-shooter, whatever, time, whatever. You can't, in today's NBA, you cannot sink that far in the paint as the top guy of a two-man side. It just does not work. You are cooked immediately.
Okay, there you go. So that's what fried me about that, to your point. Like, Cat holding the way he did, whereas you can pause the video and say, oh, wait, why is Cat standing next to Denny Avdia and they're both next to Jalen Duren? And Wimby just like trying to get back into frame. And again, don't want to confuse this with like playoff level effort. But like Wimby's trying to get back to the wing. Sky knocks down the three. He's just like, okay, who am I picking up? And it's like, oh, wait, we won? Yeah! I was like, okay. And what makes this funnier for me with Scotty in particular, like, he wasn't far removed from, like, pretty much a game-saving block, like, not too long beforehand. And then that flows to an offensive possession to where, like, he ends up getting the ball, if not on that same wing, then, like, above the break. And he just passes up an open three for a swing. It's like, big dog, I need you to shoot the ball. I end up tweeting it because, like, it was happening so quickly. I was crafting a tweet about the block as the offensive possession was starting, and then he passed up that three, and I have to, like, edit my own tweet in real time. Like, dog, shoot. And then he games it. So it's like, you know what? There you go.
He did
what needed to be done. So, like, that part was
now. Speaking of what needed to be done, are you ready to respect De'Aaron Fox, who had a game-winning three? Which captain elite sequence, by the way. Underrated all-star game sequence. Anthony Edwards cooks, gets to the paint, finishes, gets a steal, makes a three, and then LeBron, slip, help, cut, kick, game winner by De'Aaron Fox. And you wanted this man to not be in the all-star game.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't all great before that shot with Mr. De'Aaron Fox. But either way, it was a big shot for him nonetheless.
That's incredible.
I'm just saying. But no, like, it's very funny that you bring up the sequence because it was awesome. And like, I end up tweeting out a little bit later just the opening bucket of that sequence when he has Kevin Durant on him. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, Ant's doing the full dribble package. I'm about to set up this step back three. Cool. KD's like, oh, bet. He's doing the dribble package. He's about to take the step back three. Let me get ready to contest. And Ant's just like, well, actually, what if I just zoom past you instead of taking the step back three? Close to the layup. Steal, pull up. And I started this all-star conversation. We talked about Wimby setting the tone. Anthony Edwards getting activated. I sprinkle in Cade Cunningham, who I think, if Ant doesn't have some of the loud moments, like, I think you could legit argue Cade Cunningham for the All-Star Game MVP, if you are picking from the winning team. Because if we're just opening up the field, then like, that's when you get into Kawhi and his 31-point explosion. And the set was unbelievable what Kawhi was able to do. We'll get there. But Cade was very good for 98% of All-Star festivities on Sunday. That brother took melatonin on that final possession. It was deeply unfortunate. He is just staring at the top of the key, this high pick and roll. And there's the cut behind him. He's like, oh, snap. Oh, my. Rotation. Let me X out. That's De'Aaron Fox. Let me jump 20 feet in the air to make sure he doesn't take it. De'Aaron with the most casual pump fake sidestep three. I was like, dang, Cade, I've really been enjoying what you're doing tonight. That's not going to cut it. But either way, overall, really good experience for him. Like, Cade defensively in this one, that play aside, had blocks, generally rotated well, like chested up well. Like, I thought it was just a good showing for him overall. But like, that lap moment was incredibly loud. Got good chuckles out of this one. But actually, let's stick with Kawhi. Because what the heck was that?
He was in a flow state. He was in a flow state. Nothing you could do. Nothing you could do with him. Nothing you could do with him with what he was doing. Whatever spot he wanted to get to, yes. I'm going to take this shot. It's going to go in and you got to deal with it. And like, that's part of the fun that you don't necessarily get if it's just a pure 48 minute game, right? Like 31 in 12 minutes, you know, you didn't play the whole 12 minutes. Insane. That's insane. It's insane. And like, the the consistent shot making, switching, whatever, bop, 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 step back, I'm getting to whatever I want to do. Kawhi was incredible in that game. And so, like, I think that's where you get some of the fun, where Kawhi can kind of give you some of that juice in a different way that you don't necessarily expect. And, like, Team World didn't have an answer for it. And it's like, cool, Wimby, you're all the way over there. I don't care about what you're doing. I'm about to get these buckets off. Bop, bop, bop. Not a wasted dribble, not a wasted step back, not a wasted possession. And so it was just kind of fun to kind of watch that evolve. And, like, it feeling like a different game, it being a new game, Kawhi getting it off like that. Like, it's just, that's where I appreciate the format. I don't know how much they can do Team USA versus Team World. Like, I don't know if you can do that every year. But I do like the fact that each game is different. I think that's a good aspect for everyone involved.
Yeah, it was really good stuff. And, like, poor Cat, who, like, again, just got immediately got flamed for the end of the first game because of him holding, et cetera, Scotty hits three, et cetera. Underrated is that he just gets switched on to Kawhi Leonard at the end of the Team World Stripes game. And, like, I don't think it's bad defense. Kawhi's just kind of dribbling in place. Gets into the dribble move. Like, all right, cool. It's now step back time. It just drills it. And it's like, well, I don't know if there's anything Cat could have done with that. And so, like, I'm watching it live. Once he gets the switch and he's still dribbling, I'm just like, are they going to go switch and double here to get Cat out of here? Or are they actually just going to just let him chill on this island with Kawhi? And Kawhi just drills a three. And it's like, well, that's deeply unfortunate. Also funny, as Kawhi cooked, we did eventually get to Wimby just like, all right, well, fine, I will guard him. Like, some of this is just kind of like lineup dependent. We got into some real interesting, like, three big lineups with Team World. I think part of that was because it was announced, as you said on the pod Friday, Luka's going to play. He's only playing, end up only playing in the first game. So that was announced early on. He's going to play in the first one. He's going to be out the rest of whatever this is going to be. We didn't see Jokic in the second game, which I found that part kind of interesting. But again, within broader context of we are adding these 12-minute quarters together, like, it's not the first time we have seen, like, short stint Jokic, and it is worth noting that while he was playing with Denver heading into the All-Star break, he had just got back. And so I would imagine there's also, like, a part of maintenance on that front, in addition to just how Jokic generally approaches All-Star games anyway, which could be a broader conversation that's being had elsewhere. I don't really care to have it right now. But, yeah, some of the cross-matches, the one-on-ones were fun. Like, Ant was just – this was just a weekend for Ant. Like, I ended up writing about this in my general All-Star takeaway piece. But, like, during All-Star media stuff on Saturday morning, Kevin Durant is in the press conference room. He's fielding questions, things like that. Ant and, like, a group of, like, five or six other people come in because Ant was going to be up next. I can't remember what the question was to KD, but he's in the middle of answering. And Ant, like, kind of to himself, but loud enough for everyone to hear, is just like, man, none of these dudes can guard me. And I'm just like, yeah, this is okay. We're going to get an all-time Ant presser if this is the energy that he is walking in with. And so sure enough, KD finishes up, Ant goes to the presser, and he's fielding all kinds of questions, like asking about the format, asking about the Wolves. Someone asked him a question about being rated, I think, the seventh most handsome player in NBA history, or seventh hottest player in NBA history. I was like, I don't know how we got here, but fine. And Ant was also just like, wait, what you mean by that? Oh, my girl ain't gonna like this. I think I could be higher on the list, but, you know, she want me to suppress all this. I'm just like, Ant is just such a showman, for lack of a better word. And so for it to go from all of that into, okay, I'm probably gonna chill a little bit. Wait, that's Wimby guarding me. I am now activated, into Ant is now the All-Star Game MVP, and we get to that post-game presser. And he's like, yeah, I enjoyed beating Team World. Like, yeah. That's the best talent in the world. Beating them is the best feeling in the world. I'm just like, oh, okay. I see what's happening here. So he had himself a time. We'll put it that way. But I enjoyed it. Like, 12-minute sprint was there. I think the one thing I asked a few players about was because of it being this 12-minute sprint and the games being in that round robin format and stuff. It's like, how does this impact, like, how you warm up? Because it is like you get loose. You may play a very short stint, depending on if you're starting or not or whatever. And then you have to wait, or maybe you're going directly into another game. It's just these kind of bite-sized things, like, did that impact the rhythm? And so Chet was like, yeah, it was kind of weird. Had to work through it, but we ultimately got there. Kawhi was like, yeah, it's kind of, it was different, but, like, we ultimately got there. Jalen Johnson's like, nah, we young. That was good. It's like, well, that is the youthful exuberance that we come to respect. from this new era basketball player.
Hey, I'll tell you one thing, and this is where you got to credit the shift in the format. We did not have a million long pauses in between games. And I feel like that was a massive key to making this work. And I felt it when I was watching the first game, and then on TV, they showed LeBron and like Donovan Mitchell warming up in the back. And I was like, oh, this is going to be different this year. Hey, whatever you need to do, do it now. But we're not doing 30 minutes between these games. I think that's key. Like, keep it compact, keep it tight, make it work. That was the biggest miss I felt with last year, is it just took forever to get between contest to contest. Like, have them hoop, let it work, have it happen. If a team runs out of gas, that's unfortunate. You don't want that to happen. But get these games in, let it work. But I think the tournament format does work in that sense, to where, hey, if a team's not out there, let them warm up in the back, and then let's get them back out there and let's keep playing. Like that. It was compact. It was tight. I liked that aspect of it. I liked the format. I liked the fact that, you know, I mean, even if because the All-Star game, we got to be honest, not everyone plays a heavy minute load in All-Star games. Some guys are out there, usually you look at box scores, they play 8-10 minutes maybe, and some people play heavier minutes. Hey, second game, you're not playing. Pascal Siakam, you get out there and you go hoop. Like, this is what we can do with this. So I enjoyed the format.
Okay. I like it. I'm trying to think, is there anything else I wanted to highlight from the All-Star game itself? We talked about Wimby a bunch. The shot blocking for him was fun. I guess if we want to talk about like the loud Cade moment and some of the other stuff, like, hey, you know who was really fired up for the All-Star game in his first All-Star appearance? Jamal Murray. Who? Because that brother, Jamal Murray was very excited to be there. Took lots and lots and lots and lots of shots. The timing of some of the pull-up jumpers from Jamal Murray absolutely fried me. And I was like, hey, this is an All-Star game. I probably just need to calm down. This does not matter as much. It's like around the time I'm like tweeting about some of the weak side rotations and things. I'm just like, hey, Jamal, this probably isn't the time to take this one. I think it's okay.
I'll tell you one person who agrees with you, and that's Victor Wembanyama. He's like, hey, man, I'm posting up. Jamal Murray said, yeah, cool, step back. Wimby said, all right, man. Oh,
bro. Oh, I ended up tweeting about that possession. It was one of those they missed. They're pushing. Wimby goes to seal. He has Cade Cunningham sealed on the left block, and Jamal Murray's like, yes, Murray time. not only misses the pull-up three. I want to say it was either like off the side, the far side of the rim, or he airballed it completely. And I'm just like, brother, please don't do this. This your first one. I don't want you to get slandered, because like we both had Jamal Murray as a no doubt about it All-Star reserve. He has been incredibly good this season. So like obviously like no one should be seriously taking All-Star game results and doing like, well, if he didn't deserve, you know, yada yada yada. But like, damn, bro, don't give people to talk about. Getting the people nothing to talk about, though. Come on. We're good. But overall, enjoyable experience. I like the format. Last thing I want to say, as the players were naturally asked, like, how'd you feel about the format? It felt like the consensus was, hey, this actually worked. We like this. It was more competitive. This is good. There were players like Kawhi that also sprinkled in. I still want to get back to East versus West, but at the very least, they still praised the format. Like, I think if they came out of this, like, this kind of stunk. It was more so widespread, like, we really don't like this. I hope this is a one-off. Then the league is probably like, ooh, that's not great. But the fact that the players seem to like the format as well gives a little bit more credence to it coming back next year in the future. Okay. With All-Star things out of the way, Steve, I have some questions. I have some things that I am going to be tracking as we enter the second half of the season, or the post-All-Star break portion of the season, starting on Thursday night.
Oh, okay.
And so there are some obvious ones that I'm not going to talk about either because they don't super interest me right now, or because we're doing this podcast twice a week and we just talk and write about hoops a bunch. We're going to end up hitting on this a little bit later anyway, type beats. So like honorable mentions, naturally there's going to be a lot of conversation around what the lottery race is going to be, who's getting shut down, yada, 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 who ends up jockeying in the tankathon standings.
Adam Silver had his presser. No, we've done enough about that. Next.
That's what That's what I'm saying. That's what, we're setting that to the side. That's going to be there. Naturally, we are going to be talking more award stuff as the season goes on. So I don't feel the need to do, like, I'm curious about insert race here. We're going to talk about that stuff moving forward. So we'll save that for another time as well. And we're going to do more Laker talks. I'm setting the Lakers aside for a moment. Get healthy. We know, will the defense hit a level? We've had that conversation. We'll set that there. Now, as far as things that I'm intrigued by, Steve, there are two teams in the Western Conference in particular that are on high alert for me. Talked about them recently, but they're on high alert for me. The Minnesota Timberwolves, you know, fresh off of Anthony Edwards winning the weekend, performing at a high level, All-Star Game MVP, etc. How serious are y'all going to be? Because they'd be high end. This is a top 10 offense. This is a top 10 defense. Anthony Edwards can score and ultimately can match the performance of just about anyone in the league on any given night. We know this. You have the defense baked in, Rudy Gobert, Jaden McDaniels, Ant when he's locked in, et cetera. Ayo Dosunmu, we recently talked about what he adds to this group as a reserve and a potential closing option. This is a very good team that I need for that I need to realize that they are a very good basketball team. I'm not going to reheat the whole rant, but I am keeping an eye on how the Wolves come out of the All-Star break. Do they win, you know, four of their first five at the break and kind of set the tone? Because, like, they have some real upward mobility opportunity here, Steve, with where they are in the standings. If they come out on some nonsense, they could slide to the play. Like, Phoenix is right there. So I am keeping an eye on the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I am also keeping an eye on the Houston Rockets, who have been, you know, in terms of the standings, they have been one of the best teams in basketball this year. If you zoom out, even with how they entered the All-Star break, this is a team, as of recording, sixth in offense, fourth in defense, sixth in net rating per clean in the glass. They are a game behind the Denver Nuggets right now for the three seed. They're only two games ahead of Phoenix for seven. So, like, similar to Minnesota, you come out, lose three of your first five, you may be in a different spot. And that's independent of, like, what maybe Golden State does come out to bring and stuff like that. It can really get tight in that 6-8 range. So keep an eye on that. But since January 1st, Steve, the Houston Rockets, 13-10, which is fine, but very much off the pace that they were earlier in the year. 23rd in offensive rating per clean in the glass since January 1st. They are 29th in half-court offense. They have a 90.4 offensive rating in the half-court since the calendar turn this year, Steve. And we are not super far removed from doing a Houston Rockets right now with their offense and talking about some of the tempo things, how they're dealing with physicality, the overall shooting talent, like how does Reed Shepard factor into this? Like, is he closing lineups? Are they finding enough answers defensively so he can add the juice offensively and things? Houston is very good. I think there is real, like, Western Conference Finals potential here if they, especially if they end up in, like, the 2-7 or the 3-6 side of the bracket. But they have to solve their offense to a degree. They have to be a better team in the half court. You need better tempo. You need better pace. You need a little bit more variety in your half court offense. You need a better version of Alperen Şengün. In tight moments, you need a better answer for Amen Thompson if teams are going to put more bigs on him. So, like, I'm just wondering, like, what are the Houston Rockets going to look like? And not going to hang here because we are still gathering information. But in light of, like, all of the KD Twitter stuff, like, there's also just an element of, like, hey, what is the general vibe of Houston right now heading into the break? So I'm going to be keeping an eye on that too. But more importantly, it's more, can they get this offense in order? Because, like, 29th in half-court offense for 23 games, that's just not going to get it done. Like, that is just screaming first-round exit if this is what the offense is going to be. So I, my eyes on Minnesota and Houston, but I am really curious about what Houston's going to look like. Is that
fair? Did you just rehash the Houston breakdown that we did?
Hey, listen, link below.
We already talked about it. If they have to fix that either way, they're still the four seed in the Western Conference. They're a game behind Denver for third. I think they just have to figure out how to execute consistently offensively. If they do that, they could rise. They could be the three seed. You could be setting yourself up for a Houston-Minnesota first-round series where you're just going to be mad at whoever loses. So I would be careful with that. I mean, I think the thing for me is these teams, it's the Western Conference, right? These teams have massive, massive positives. They have flaws that can be exploited and will be exploited about these against these teams that they are facing. The Rockets are 18-7 at home. So they have an opportunity to build some wins up with their a home stretch. Minnesota has got to find a way to get their game to travel and win games on the road. But these are like the Wolves are virtually tied with the Lakers for the 5 seed. They're a half game behind Houston. They're only a game and a half behind Denver. That 4-team shuffle is going to be very interesting because they're all going to end up facing each other. Phoenix is still knocking on the door. But the battle between Denver, Houston, Los Angeles, and the Wolves is going to be really hard to deal with because there's a high likelihood all those teams are going to face each other. Two of them will be eliminated in the first round. And so it's hard to avoid because San Antonio, while it hasn't been always pretty, they've always found a way to say, hey, we're just going to stay here at number 2. And we might knock on the door, Oklahoma City. So watch out for that. But I mean, this is what the Western Conference is. It's a gauntlet. And so for Houston, absolutely, yeah, they got to fix the offense. But you need to get yourself in a position where that defense is strong. And now when you have a game plan mentality coming to playoffs, could that help you out more? Could you be a matchup dependent type beat? Are you better suited for a playoff series than the regular season? How does that help you? Same thing for Minnesota. And so that's where it becomes tricky. When you look at Denver, Houston, the Lakers, and the Wolves, you can see playoff upside with each of those teams, especially if Denver can get healthy to a certain degree. But Houston, the Lakers, and Minnesota, not really teams you want to face in a playoff series. Houston, because of their defense, and they can take things away. And then, okay, we're methodical in the half court. I think, honestly, a big piece of what Houston's missing has been Alper and Şengün going backwards and teams saying, hey, go ahead, drive. We're going to stay at home. It's fine. Do whatever you got to do. For the Lakers, they have to get their defense to a certain level. For Minnesota, they have to make sure they compete at a high enough level every single night. They have what it takes defensively. They've made the improvements offensively. So it's now what's going to stick. And you got to remember, this is the time of year where it's a sprint to the playoffs. And so there's not a lot of time. There's not a lot of wiggle room. And so, yeah, maybe Houston was 29th in half court offense. How will that feel differently if that defense goes up another level, or they're able to kind of compete in a different level? How does that kind of factor in? Look, I think it's concern is fine, but these teams are going to face each other and they're going to have to deal with each other. And so what are we weighing? Because all these are going to be the matchups unless Phoenix goes on a tremendous run. These four teams are likely going to face each other in the first round.
That is fair. I think as of right now, like you mentioned, San Antonio knocking on the door. San Antonio quietly just 3 games behind OKC. So, like, any kind of slide. And the Spurs currently riding a 6-game winning streak, or they were riding a 6-game winning streak heading into All-Star break. So we'll see if that continues on Thursday against the Phoenix Suns, funny enough. But the Suns in 7th, only a game and a half behind Minnesota as of recording. So, I don't know. It wouldn't take much of a run for Phoenix to get into that race. So we'll keep tabs on that. Last couple of things for me while I'm thinking about the Western Conference. Like, the big thing I wanted to bring up with OKC, who still best record in the league, though Detroit knocking on the door overall, if you want to zoom that out. And again, 3 games ahead of San Antonio right now. It's really just keeping an eye on Jalen Williams. Like, there is like a natural, like, hey, just how healthy will everyone be? That is a general league-wide storyline to keep track of as you mentioned, get to the sprint to the second half of the year. The healthier teams are going to be better set up for playoff pushes. But Jalen Williams has been recovering from the wrist injury, came back, went out again, has now returned again. He is coming off of one of the most efficient games of his career ahead to get to the All-Star break. Funny enough, coming against the Phoenix Suns, 27-point victory there. Jalen Williams missed a singular shot in that basketball game. But OKC, and sorry for the duh analysis, they're at their best when Shea is playing at the level that he's playing at, and I think he is the easy front runner for MVP right now, and when Jalen Williams is also producing at an all-star / all-NBA level. And I think if Jalen Williams is able to find a level of comfort in the half court in particular as a scorer, like, I don't worry about the playmaking that much. I don't worry about the defense. Like, even as he was working himself in the rhythm, the defense has just been very good for Jalen Williams again. So it's more so, in the half court, how often is he getting to the rim? And by proxy, how often is he getting to the free throw line? What is the balance between I am driving and getting all the way to the rim? I am driving and at least getting into the paint for some of the short pull-up jumpers that he likes. how often are these like one or two dribble drives? I'm picking this up early for a deeper pull up, or I'm kicking the ball out for someone else to try to make an advantage. And OKC, they do still have like AJ Milton, the others that can puncture those gaps. But the best version of Jalen Williams is someone that is uber aggressive and is getting downhill a little bit deeper and making quicker decisions. So for me, it's just more so tracking how consistently will we get that version of Jalen Williams? Because if we get that, or if OKC gets that, naturally, the Thunder have already proven they're the best team in the league. They are coming off of a championship run. If Jalen Williams hits that level with Shai playing like this and with the defense still being incredibly good, you have Chet, you eventually have Isaiah Hartenstein, you keep an eye on his health as well for just going the overall health thing. But Jalen Williams seems like the most important player to track with OKC in particular. Shai's obviously the best. I'm just keeping an eye on what form he's going to be in. Because if he's good, the Thunder ceiling gets even higher, and the Western Conference is not going to be fun for anyone that has to deal with OKC. So I'm keeping tabs on Jalen Williams.
Understood. I am keeping tabs on who takes the second spot in the Eastern Conference. I think the Pistons are stamped, but is Boston going to take it? Are the Knicks going to take it? Are the Cavs going to make a run? Who gets the two in the East gets real interesting to me. Because I think we're kind of settled to a degree as far as the order, I think. Like, I don't know if Orlando and Miami push into the playoffs. Could be surprised, could be wrong. But I think the Raptors and Sixers have been too solid for majority of the year. But who can kind of make that push to where, okay, is it Boston that's going to grab a hold of this? We've seen the Knicks play extremely well, you know, going into the All-Star break. But we've seen the Cavs be on this run, and they're only going to get better as you have more time with James Harden. So who kind of elevates to that second spot? Because now that's going to mean, okay, you guys are going to have to face each other in the conference semifinals in theory. And Detroit's been a machine all year. Hopefully they get the respect they deserve, because they've earned the right to be not only at the top of the East, they're almost at the top of the NBA. And so I'm intrigued by that part of the Eastern Conference.
I'm glad you said capped it there, because like, I just scrolled over. Like, I actually want to correct something that I said a little bit earlier. I said, hey, OKC, Detroit kind of battling for that top spot. In terms of win percentage, Steve, because the Thunder have the most wins in the NBA, Detroit Pistons, they currently have the best win percentage in the NBA right now. So, like, they absolutely deserve their respect. Like, obviously, big gap from them and the rest of the Eastern Conference right now. But, yeah, like, them and OKC, they've been battling for most of the year. They now have the best win percentage. Like, very slight, but shout out to the league best Detroit Pistons right now. So to your point, Steve, about the top of the East in particular, something that I had in my notes was like, hey, are we going to see Jason Tatum? Because we're talking about, hey, is Boston going to, you know, submit themselves as the second best team in the Eastern Conference, or even the best team in the Eastern Conference once we get to the playoffs? I think standings wise, Detroit just kind of has it. Jason Tatum continues to work out, continues to do more. Jaylen Brown was asked during All-Star Weekend, like, hey, what have you seen from Jason Tatum in particular? It's like, hey, I didn't get to see his most recent workout. But in the other ones, like, he looks good. He looks close. If we're talking about a Jason Tatum that, you know, comes back mid-March, let's say, and he's just, you know, we're going to play you 20 to 24 minutes a game through the rest of the regular season just to kind of warm you in. Like, that helps their defense. That helps their defensive rebounding, which has been probably the weakest point of their profile so far this year. And he is a guy that can be used as a screener to poke at mismatches, can be used as a screener if you're putting two on the ball against Jalen or one of these other guards. If you're talking about defenses that are just naturally aggressive, Jason Tatum can make short role plays for you. Like, he still is going to have the spot up shooting or the isolation scoring in his bag. So even if it isn't all NBA level Jason Tatum, if he comes back, like, that's helpful for half of a game. If we're just setting that as like a baseline for him. So just a general, does he come back? And if he does, like, how quickly does he round into whatever his form is going to be? Because I think, regardless, the best version of Jason Tatum is going to be more of a next season thing, in my eyes, at the very least. But if we get to, he makes a return in mid-March or something like that, he plays in the postseason for Boston, and he is 85% of himself, Boston has already proven, like, we have an argument for the second best team in the East, if not the best team in the East, for just look like overall net rating and stuff like that. Adding Tatum to that bunch makes that case even stronger. So I am naturally keeping an eye on what that part is going to look like for Boston.
I know you fantastic. Are and Jason Tatum should take a cue from the dunker spot. and I'm glad he's healthy. But you should take a cue from us and take a break. So we'll be back with more of the Dunker Spot after this break.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. Steve, time to cap it with a little unrivaled talk. We are fresh off of the one-on-one tournament ending. A salute to Chelsea Gray. We're certainly going to get there. Before we get into the one-on-one tournament and the doubleheader that we have later tonight, had a little bit of news on the unrivaled front. Breanna Stewart had been teasing, and other unrivaled players, had been teasing a big secret for pretty much over a week at this point. And it was finally announced over the weekend, Steve, that unrivaled, fresh off of a very successful and historic Philly run earlier this season, unrivaled coming to Brooklyn, Steve, coming to the Barclays, March 2nd, during the semifinals of the Unrivaled playoffs, we are going to have Unrivaled basketball in Barclays Center. Seems exciting. I'm kind of surprised that we got this or a second, like, different location game in this season. I figured that would have been more built into, hey, we're just going to go expand the tour next year. I think this kind of speaks to just how well the turnout was in Philadelphia and in general, like how people are leaning more into Unrivaled and just soaking that in and enjoying it. I think it's good stuff. Like, I'm excited. I was joking with you when it was announced. I was like, well, darn. I was already kind of planning on like this Miami trip to hit like Heat Rockets plus, you know, the Unrivaled playoffs if I can swing it. And so now the Brooklyn trips make sense. Like, well, darn. I can't really just do that. I have to go back and forth. I'm going to do that. But I'm excited about the Brooklyn run. Do you have Brooklyn unrivaled thoughts before we
go? No, fantastic to see Unrivaled in Barclays. So can't wait to see what that looks like.
Okay. I would imagine it's going to get sold out, much like the Philly session did. So we will see what that looks like as we get closer. Now, to this one-on-one tournament, Steve. Across Friday and Saturday, we had the second round, the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and also the finals. Chelsea Gray ends up running through everyone, in which she beats her Aces teammate, Jackie Young, 12-6. She beats Paige Beckers in the quarterfinals, 11-2. She beats Kelsey Plum, former Aces teammate, 12-8. And boy, that game got dicey at the end. Both players were exhausted by the end of that one-on-one matchup. Like, can we please knock down a jumper so we can get out of here? Chelsea Gray ends up making the three. We close it. And then we get the finals against Alicia Gray, which in the one-on-one tournament, normally it's games to 11. Once you get to the finals, it is going to 7. And so in that first game, Steve, against Alicia Gray, Alicia Gray wins that one, 7-0. It's like, ooh, this gets kind of tough. Chelsea Gray wins the second one, 8-3. She wins the final game, 7-6. In another, we are exhausted. We need to end this. I need to knock down a jumper because I don't know how many more drives I have left in me. So I'll just say broadly, very impressive run for Chelsea Gray, who on my ballot, I think I had her second in that player pod. Well, it's like, I think the tough shot making certainly holds. And I think defending any type post up would be dope. I had questions about like what the defense in space was going to look like with the shortened shot clock and things. Very much proved me wrong as the tournament went on. And like, naturally culminates in her winning the thing. But like the Paige matchup in particular was just so rude, Steve. As I, you know, this was happening during the Rising Stars game. And so I watched it pretty much when I got back. Like, okay, let's see what actually happened here. And oh my goodness, it was very much a case of you're not ready for this, with all due respect. I'm going to be rude to you. I'm going to hit you with my normal package of shot making. Body bumps. You're not going to have fun. We're getting you out of here. So I just want to salute Chelsea Gray for the run, et cetera. And so just to kind of broaden out for you, Steve, like with the Chelsea run or just anything with the 1v1, like what were some of your favorite matchups? What were some of your favorite moments from the weekend?
Well, I mean, I think you have to start with Chelsea Gray, the winner, as you so eloquently drew out there during that. I think what happened with Chelsea Gray was, it triggered me because that's how my dad used to play one-on-one against me was just, I'm going to eventually hit you, get to my spot. There's nothing you can do about it. And that's what Chelsea Gray did over and over and over again. What she did to Paige was just like, I'm going to get to my spot. I'm going to hit you. There's nothing you can do about it. You're going to foul me or I'm going to score. And then Kelsey Plum sent a message, 8-0. Mm-hmm. And Chelsea Gray's response was HB dive over and over and over again. So it's funny because you talked about the process behind one-on-one before. And I'm like, hey, it changes once you get hit. Because if you notice, KP was like, I need to make a three. As soon as she got a stop, I need to make a three. Jab three, didn't get the make, got the rebound, shoot another three, didn't get that one, shoot another three. Let me get out of this matchup. It becomes different because you risk a drive or a step back or you're not going to get a foul. You now have seen over five possessions, I can't get a stop. I need to get out of here. It was almost the same thing with Alicia Gray and Aaliyah Boston, where Alicia Gray had the advantage. And it looked like, okay, can Aaliyah Boston not get to her spots? And then we were very quickly reminded that Aaliyah Boston can get back to her spots. And Alicia Gray was like, well, good Lord, I need a three to get out of here. Now, she made hers. The toughest part was Paige was so bad, so bad. So the face that Paige made on that last foul, which I don't think, and I know why they have to do it that way, but I don't think you should end a one-on-one game on free throws. Then you would have unlimited fouls. So I understand why it's that way. But yeah, Paige was hot at that one. But I think like one-on-one's a tricky deal. It's a hard aspect as far as like you have to be able to defend mentally. You can get beat down by the matchup and it can change very quickly. I think we saw that as the tournament progressed, quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, like Alicia Gray and Chelsea Gray turned into like a Hell in a Cell match by the end of it because they just were like, hey, I don't have a jumper, but I'm gonna drive, I'm gonna hit you, I'm gonna try and figure out a way to get a bucket up, or do something. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Chelsea Gray being able to get two straight, two out of three, that's not easy to do. So, I mean, I salute everyone for doing it. You know what I mean? Now, I will say, Courtney Williams, Deisha Hyman, what
happened? That is not the solidarity that I thought we were going to get. And it's funny because, like, Courtney Williams lost the way that she did to Veronica Burton. And Courtney, in the midst of like being self-deprecating and things like that, joking around, it's like, hey, well, hey, you got to win it for us. And then
12-0.
I will say,
12-0.
Yes, hey, KP was not kind in that matchup. I will say quickly to like just the general war of attrition bit with one-on-one and even circling back to the Chelsea defense in particular. Because again, that was my like the only thing that would prevent me from saying like she just wins it. Because like from a shot making perspective, like she literally has a finals MVP off of having one of the best shot making runs in basketball history. So like that would not surprise me at all. I will say Chelsea kind of not gaming the system, but just kind of knowing the rules, like, hey, so I do have like two non-shooting fouls to play with here, or a non-shooting foul to play with before it's automatic free throw. If you do beat me on a drive, immediate hack, immediate wrap up, let's run this back. You're not getting an easy one. Let's try this again. It's a hurt being able to kind of bake some of those in within these matchups, even going back to the first round, I think was just smart on her part and is just yet one of 3 million signals that Chelsea Gray is one of the smartest basketball players on earth. So I did appreciate that part and probably should have factored that rule and knowing that rule a little bit more into my early analysis and trying to get the pods together and stuff like that. But yeah, that was a time. Like you mentioned, Kelsey Plum getting Tisha Hyman out of there. Aaliyah Boston's run in this was fun. It was incredibly physical. The battle for the right to spell Aaliyah with one or two A's, I guess, at the beginning, between her and Leah Edwards. Just one of the more physical one-on-one body blow Aaliyah, after body blow after body blow.
Aaliyah Boston was going to hit you several times.
Uh-huh. And I'm just like, I was impressed with her run overall. She gets Stewie out of here with, again, a lot of those body blows. And it's like, okay, we might actually have something here. And then we get the Aaliyah matchup. And I just felt bad for Aaliyah Edwards. It's someone that did incredibly well last year in the tournament, looked like she was shaping up to do incredibly well again in this tournament, and meets up with Aaliyah Boston, and you could just see her face as it went on, like, hey, this is a lot. I'm getting called for fouls that I don't even know if some of these are fouls, but like, also, even if it is, like, this is a lot. What is this? She gets a miss. She takes a jumper. She misses a jumper. You can just see it on her face. Like, oh, snap. I got to do this again, dog. I don't feel like I don't feel like dealing with this right now. To that end, the Alicia Gray, Aaliyah Boston matchup was fun. Again, both physical players. Aaliyah Boston, Jesus. She's just a handle. She's just tough to handle. And like, watching that go from Alicia Gray's going to get her out of here early to here's this 10-0 run for Aaliyah Boston because she's just hitting Alicia Gray. It's like, oh, we might actually get like a super deep run here. And as you mentioned, Alicia Gray knocks down three. So like, I just had a lot of fun with the one-on-one tournament. Once again, congrats to Chelsea Gray, who now over the last calendar year is the unrivaled championship, the Aces championship, and now the one-on-one championship on top of this. She just wins. She just wins.
She just wins.
Chelsea Gray does.
The real point guard doesn't have to cheat competitions. What are you looking forward to in tonight's doubleheader?
Unbelievable. We are very much in playoff standings mode right now. In the early game, we have the Laces, who have already clinched the playoff spot. They have the best record in the league. Taking on the Hive, who are only a half game out of six right now, Steve, at 3-7. And so, which version of Kelsey Mitchell are we getting in this matchup? The Laces obviously have a ton of defenders all over the place. Is she able to shake free? Is she able to shake loose at all? Do the Hive get busy on the offensive glass? Or the Laces able to corral those? Have some early thought notes there. And then we get Breeze and Lunar Owls in the late game. Hey, I just kind of want to see more consistency defensively, or offensively rather, from Breeze. So naturally keeping an eye on the page usage. What is that going to look like? How many coverages will we see against Marina Mabry in this matchup? I think could be a real shot maker's ball, which I'm still just kind of surprised with how the one-on-one tournament went for Marina in particular. But either way, I'm looking at the guard play in that one. What stands out to you about this doubleheader, good sir?
I mean, we'll just see. Can the Breeze find a way to establish themselves over three quarters? Or will the Lunar Owls be able to bother them and the fourth quarter becomes an interesting object? Can the Hive, the new look Hive to a degree, just kind of find enough defense and enough offense to bother the Laces? Can they bring them into the mud? That gets interesting. The Laces have just been too competitive, and it's been tough to deal with them on both ends of the floor. So I'm intrigued to see how competitive can the first three quarters be in both these games, and what does that mean for the fourth quarter? Because the Hive and Lunar Owls, the records are what they are. That's not really a team you want to go man for man with in the fourth quarter. So can the Laces and Breeze create enough distance to where that fourth quarter doesn't matter? That's what I'm kind of keeping an eye on.
I got you. And I just quickly add, as we have the Hive playing, we have the Breeze playing. We talked about the trade last week. Again, we're not going to see Angel with Rose until Friday. But we are going to see, like, okay, cool. If we're going to see if we get Azaree Stevens in this one. Is she going to make her debut? Courtney Williams, fresh off of the one-on-one tournament, making the debut for Breeze, I would imagine, barring some kind of injury or something. What is she going to look like within the system? Like, how does that impact Paige? Is it going to be more off-ball Paige when they're on the floor together, if they get on the floor together? Because Noel Quinn has more recently experimented with having those two bigs on the floor in Cam Brink and Don Belonga. Like, what is the lineup versatility going to look like there? So just kind of keeping track of what the new additions are going to look like in these new spots. And with that, Steve, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. And again, likely going to the mailbag for the Friday episode. So if you have basketball questions or anything that comes to mind within reason, let's be normal, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We're going to have some fun. You can follow me on socials at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.